Deuteronomy chapter 17 has instructions that God gave Israel through the prophet Samuel regarding the king. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say through Samuel. That was later. This is instructions God gave Israel well ahead of time through Moses regarding the king. Deuteronomy 17, and in a moment we're going to read verses 18 to 20. There are four of you. Let's have four verses then, so everybody can have a verse. We'll read 17 through 20. And this is about the king needing to know the law. Now, of course, it's about the king of Israel knowing the old covenant law given at Mount Sinai through Moses. But the principle of the one, someone who is in a position of power in the government, needing to know and adhere to the law by which he is in power in that government, goes further than just the instance of Israel and its king. So, Angie, since you're right here on my left, why don't you start? And each of you please read a verse, Deuteronomy 17, 17 through 20.
Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold.
And it shall be, when he sitteth upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book, out of that which is before the priests, the Levites.
And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, and to keep all the words of this law and these ordinances to do them.
That his heart may not be lifted above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, and that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, and he and his children in the midst of Israel.
Amen. Okay, friends, la prueba, the quiz. La quiz. A little test with some pretty easy questions, just to help you if you're ever tempted not to pay attention in class or take good notes, or if you're ever slightly tempted not to read carefully the assigned reading. Just a little something to nudge you back into your lane if you get tempted out of it. All right, five questions. The first one. In the 1824 and 1827 constitutions, what three branches of government were established? In the 1824 and 1827 constitutions, what three branches of government were established? What three branches of government were established in the 1824 and 1827 constitutions? Okay. Question number two. In the 1832 siege of Anahuac by the Texian settlers, did the Texian settlers express support for the 1824 constitution or a desire for it to be overturned? When the Mexican fort at Anahuac was under siege by the Texian settlers in 1832, and they said what it was they were wanting, did they express support for the 1824 Constitution or a desire for it to be overturned? I would have made it a better question if I had said, did they want it to be upheld or overturned? Question number three. Was the tyrannical Colonel Bradburn of Anahuac supported by Colonel Piedras from Nacogdoches against the Texans, or was he removed? In response to the siege, Colonel Piedras from Nacogdoches came. And Colonel Bradburn, whom the Texans considered tyrannical, was he supported or removed? What Mexican politician seized power in 1830 and pursued a more narrow policy toward Texas than had previous rulers? What Mexican politician seized power in 1830 and pursued a more narrow policy toward Texas than had previous rulers? And question number 5. When Colonel Mejia came to Texas with a flotilla of ships and hundreds of soldiers, did the Texians find him in favor of the 1824 constitutional government or against it? When Colonel Mejia came to Texas with a flotilla of ships and hundreds of soldiers, did the Texians find him in favor of the 1824 constitutional government or against it? Okay, would each of you three young ladies, one each, tell us the three branches of government established in those constitutions?
Legislative,
executive, judicial.
Woohoo! All right, Alvin. 1832, Siege of Anahuac, were the Texians for the Constitution being upheld or overturned?
To be upheld.
Yep. Okay, Colonel Bradburn, was he supported by Colonel Piedras when he came or removed?
Removed.
Mm-hmm. All right, politician 1830, Ava. All right, Colonel Mejia, in favor of the Constitution or against it?
Defending in favor of the 1824.
That's right. All right. Okay, then, Alvin. Now, that is funny, and I know we watched a movie with that together, but you may not say that to your father or your teacher in school. Let's hear any item, an item of your choice, from the official timeline. Recite for us any item of your choice from the official timeline.
1718, San Antonio, Mission, Presidio, and Villa are established.
Yes. All right. Angie, your choice. Any item from the timeline.
1541, Coronado enters Texas Panhandle from the west.
Ava, your choice of any item from the timeline. All right, Audrey, your choice. Any item from the timeline.
1830, Bustamante takes power because there's a narrow policy towards Texas.
This is a bit like the game of Jenga, where you have to pull a you have to pull a block out, and you take the easiest ones first, or any other games where something's under tension and you have to pull something out, and you pull the easy ones first that obviously aren't going to mess up anything. Then eventually there's one that you're not really sure and you kind of pull on it. All right, Alvin, let's hear another item from the official timeline.
1828, Dvatka lands at Galveston Island.
Well, it wouldn't be 1828.
Sorry. 1528. Dvatka lands at Galveston Island.
Okay. Minus 1/4 of a style point for accidentally saying 1828. But you got it right. Okay, Angie, you pull a Jenga block out.
1824, Mexican Federal Constitution is passed.
Ava.
1542, DeSoto expedition enters Texas from the northeast.
Woohoo! All right, Audrey, your choice.
1819, Eastern border of Texas
establishes the Sabine River. Nice one. Uh-oh. Well, you, there, no, it shouldn't take you. There's several others for you to choose from.
1685, LaSalle lands at Matagorda Bay.
Whoa! We're nice.
We're all just thinking the same one, because then I plan on saying that. Okay.
The ones we've had on our timeline for the longest, I guess maybe are the best entrenched. All right.
I might need slight help with the pronunciation. 1827. Coahuila y Texas.
Mm-hmm, that's close.
State constitution is passed.
Ava, my dear, you have gotten lucky because you don't have to pick. There's one left, and so you'll be able to just...
I think I know what it was. I think I know what it was.
There was a very busy year.
Yes. 1821, Moses Austin receives a grant to form a colony in Texas.
Okay. So there's our timeline. I'm not adding an item today.
Okay.
Because I keep talking about the constitutions of 24 and 27, and I'm not making much progress, so I'm going to just not add an item. The assignment for this coming week is to read the next chapter in the Yoakum book. Thanks for loaning me that. I'm sorry I forgot to return it. Chapter 20, to review your class notes and timeline for the quiz next time. Today I'm going to speak to you some more about the 1824 National and 1827 State Constitutions. There's just so much that's so good for us to understand that are contained in them that are so useful and necessary for understanding the things that have gone on in Texas history, and for making you all ready to be good Texans in your generation, that I find myself lingering here in these excellent constitutions. I'm going to read you something more from the 1824 Constitution and from the 1827 Constitutions and from some other sources about the subject of the militia. Militia, M-I-L-I-T-I-A, militia. And I wanted to know what the term was in Spanish that was translated militia in English. So thankfully the website I was looking at these constitutions on had both the Spanish and the English. And in Spanish, the word translated militia is milicia. It's the same word, except there's a C instead of a T. La Milicia, M-I-L-I-C-I-A, La Milicia. So when we're saying militia in English, we don't have to wonder whether that's some different term or concept. It's the same term, and the concept is the same too. I'm going to read to you from the 1824 Constitution, the fourth section, of the attributes of the president and the restrictions of his powers. So if we're talking about the president, what branch of government is this?
Executive.
The executive branch. Now, you don't have to try to get down everything I'm reading you here. What the important things are the things that I'm going to comment on about the militia. The attributes of the president are the following. To name the heads of the treasury, the general commissaries, diplomatic agents, consuls, colonels and other superior officers of the permanent army and of the armed and active militia. So he gets to name all these government officials. He's elected president, and then within the executive branch, he appoints the other executive officers, including the rank of colonel and above, colonels and other superior officers. And then he names two things, the permanent army and the militia, the armed and active militia. So in this 1824 Mexican National Constitution, there is the recognition of the militia. Okay, the president gets to name its officers, its senior officers, colonel and colonels and generals. Okay, now here's the next item in that article. To appoint the other officers of the permanent army and the armed active militia and the officers of the Confederation observing there in the disposition of law. Oh, I understand something that I didn't get right before. After it says, in the one that I just read you, appointing colonels and other superior officers, it says, with the approbation of the Senate. Now it says, appoint the other officers. So apparently from colonel up, colonel and general, he gets to appoint them, but only if the Senate confirms them. Officers below that, he gets to appoint, and they don't have to be confirmed by the Senate. But again, it mentions in that line, the permanent army and of the armed and active militia. Then in another paragraph, it's going to mention the militia again, to dispose of the permanent army and navy and the active militia for the interior security and external defense of the nation. Something big and bad is going on inside the nation. He gets to order the permanent army and the militia, or if there's the need to defend against external invasion, again, he disposes of both the permanent army and navy and the militia. Then I'll read you the next item here. To dispose of the local militia for the same objects, and even employ the same beyond the limits of their respective states and territories after previous consent of the General Congress. So he gets to dispose of the local militia and even employ it outside of its own state, but only if the Congress specifies that. So this Constitution recognizes two divisions in the country's military forces. The permanent army. The term we use in America for the permanent army is a standing army. The permanent army and the militia. Both part of the country's armed forces, but they are distinct from one another. And the militia, in order to be used away from their home state, the president has to have authorization from the Congress. He cannot, just by his own authority, order them into service outside their own state. Okay? The militia. This is the 1824 National Constitution. So, a few years later, you know, the state of Coahuila y Tejas wrote up their constitution. What year?
1827.
And in part five, there's the talk of this militia. And the title of the section is of the civil militia of the state. de la Milicia Civica del Estado, of the civic militia of the state. And I copied out two of the five articles to read to you, and to check whether there was something different in our English translation of it from the Spanish, which was the original, I copied out the Spanish and kind of looked at it real closely, and as far as I could tell, it's just a very tight translation, very literal translation of it. Doesn't appear to be any perversion of it in the translation. Corps of civic militia shall be established in all the towns of the state, and the said corps shall compose the military force of the state. So groups, units, referred to here as corps, C-O-R-P-S, shall be established in all the towns of the state. So you get there some of the idea of what is meant by the militia. It's a unit that's going to be established in every town. Not just the biggest towns, but in every town. But then where there isn't a town, you know, where there's not really people, then of course there's no militia. In every town, there's going to be a corps of militia. And here's who has to be in it. No Coahuil Tejano can decline lending said service when required by law and in the manner it provides. You know, there's different standing for people, but basically no citizen, no Coahuil Tejano, no Texan, no Coahuil or Texan, can decline said service when required by law and in the manner it provides. You know, nobody can order him to serve when not required by law. But if required by law, he cannot decline serving. And he can't be ordered to serve in some manner that's not what the law says, but whatever manner the law says, he cannot decline and has to serve in that manner. So there are the constitutional provisions in the 1824 National Constitution, the 1827 State Constitution, about the militia. It is part of the military force of the Republic, and it is the entire military force of the state. Said corps shall compose the military force of the state. The state is not authorized in its constitution to have a permanent army and navy. The Republic is, the country is, the nation, but not the state. It is part of the military force of the country. It is the entire military force of the state. And it is not the permanent or standing army or navy. It is the other part of it from that. And it's something that's raised from every town and every citizen. Now, it only means the men. It doesn't mean the women. Every citizen is required to participate in whatever manner is prescribed by law. You understand, this is the Constitution. There will follow a law or laws. I suppose they did. I didn't go look it up and see what it was. But there would follow a law exactly describing the service that was required. The militia. Oh, I meant to mention, to say earlier, militia from the Latin for soldier. M-I-L-E-S. Miles. I don't know how they said that. Did any of you, did you ever encounter that? What?
It sounds like plural. I'm not sure.
Oh, for soldiers, maybe so.
Maybe milis?
Milis?
Certain.
I don't know either. So it really just means the soldiers or the soldiery, but then came to be used in this manner. It's not a development just coming into Western civilization in the 1820s. It goes back farther. So now let me read you some things about the militia from other sources, okay? Do you all already remember in what year the 13 colonies declared independence from Great Britain? 1776. Not to be confused with the year that fighting broke out between the colonies and Great Britain, which was 1775. The date in April 1775? Paul Revere's ride, Battle of Lexington.
On the 18th of April, 1775.
The 18th of April, 1705, and then the actual fighting was the next day, the 19th of April, I think. The one battle consisting of two engagements, the Battle of
Lexington
and Concord, right, which are towns in the vicinity of the big city,
Boston.
And so it was 1776 that we declared independence, and Virginia, then being a newly independent state, wrote up its state constitution. Section 13 about the militia, okay? So hear what they said, that a well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people trained to arms is the proper, natural, and safe defense of a free state. That standing armies in time of peace should be avoided as dangerous to liberty. And that in all cases the military should be under strict subordination to and governed by the civil power. Do you notice that here the militia is distinguished from the standing army? Militia, states to have a militia, it's not to have a standing army in time of peace. So we just read that in the 1824 and 1827 constitutions. The militia is a military force, but it is not the standing army or permanent army. Notice that this state, Virginia, is going to have the militia and does not intend to have a standing army, at least not in times of peace. And that was the same, that's the same thing that the state of Coahuila y Tejas is going to have. Their militia is going to be their entire military force. Notice that the Virginians say the militia is composed of the body of the people. It's not just those who volunteer, it's not who those who whatever, it is the body of the people trained to arms. The Coahuila y Tejas Constitution said no citizen is excused from this service. No citizen may decline this service, indicating that all of the men were subject to this militia service. And here in the Virginia Constitution from 50 years before, the militia is the body of the people trained to arms. It says that it is the natural defense of a free state. It says that it's the safe defense of a free state. Because if you have a standing or permanent army to defend your free state, then that standing or permanent army might itself infringe the rights of the people. But the militia is not going to infringe the rights of the people because the militia is the people. So, the next year, the New York State Constitution, 1777. I'll read you a little bit from this and then make some comments from which you should could then take your notes. Whereas it is of the utmost importance to the safety of every state that it should always be in a condition of defense, and it is the duty of every man who enjoys the protection of society to be prepared and willing to defend it, this convention, therefore, in the name and by the authority of the good people of this state, doth ordain, determine, and declare that the militia of this state, at all times hereafter, as well in peace as in war, shall be armed and disciplined and in readiness for service. That all such of the inhabitants of this state, being of the people called Quakers, as from scruples of conscience may be averse to the bearing of arms, be therefrom excused by the legislature, and do pay to the state such sums of money in lieu of their personal service as the same may, in the judgment of the legislature, be worth. And that a proper magazine of warlike stores, proportionate to the number of inhabitants, be forever hereafter, at the expense of this state and by acts of the legislature, established, maintained, and continued in every county in this state. You know, it's a beautiful thing to us to read that even in a matter so necessary to the common good as the military defense, people known to have religious scruples against that may have an exception to this mandate. You know, there's of course a lesson for our times today and for all other times. There is no cause that should be thought so dear to the country or to the state or to the government that people should be compelled to act against religious conscience in order to comply with the wishes of the state. Even in the matter of life and death, existence of the state, defense from invasion by the British or Indians or whoever else, even then the Quakers, known to be pacifists by conscience in religion, will be allowed to be exempt from it. They still have to contribute, but they can contribute in money rather than in personal service. But other than religious exemptions, other than scruples of conscience, reference to the Quakers, it is the duty of every man who enjoys the protection of society to be prepared and willing to defend it. Every man. So they are defining the militia as, in effect, every man. And, of course, they would acknowledge that there are cases in which a person is not suitable for actual service in the militia, being too old or in some physical way made unable to serve. And it talks about keeping a magazine of warlike stores, powder and lead and whatever else it was at the time and whatever it would be today. So the expense of the state, there's a magazine of ammunition, and then each person is required to serve in the as part of the militia. They shall be armed and disciplined and in readiness for service. Every man is by nature part of the militia, but by order of the Constitution of the state, the militia is to be armed and disciplined and in readiness for service. Okay. Now, we're going to fast forward a few important years to 1790. Now, I think I said that that was the New York Constitution, which it was. But when it started talking about Quakers, I think for a moment I forgot that was the New York Constitution, and I was thinking Pennsylvania. But what I was just speaking of and reading from was the New York Constitution, 1777. Now I'll read from the Pennsylvania Constitution, 1790. So what's been going on all in between 1777 and 1790? There has been the fighting of the war for independence. There has been the writing and passing of the Constitution and the establishment of the new government according to the Constitution. What year was it when George Washington assumed the presidency?
1789.
In 1789 in New York. So then, Pennsylvania State Constitution, 1790. They have a part that is of the militia. The freemen of this commonwealth shall be armed and disciplined for its defense. That sounds familiar, right? The freemen of this commonwealth shall be armed and disciplined for its defense. Those who conscientiously scruple to bear arms shall not be compelled to do so. So we know that's at least the Quakers and possibly others.
Specifies that it's a known thing. It's not just something that you just now decided that you didn't want to do.
Those who conscientiously scruple to bear arms shall not be compelled to do so, but shall pay an equivalent for personal service. You hear that? That's the same provision from the New York Constitution, isn't it? The militia officers shall be appointed in such manner and for such time as shall be directed by law. So you hear that in very simple language, all of the men are included except servants or slaves. It's the free men who shall be armed and disciplined for its defense. And this is referred to as the militia. Okay, so you are getting this. You may have understood this very well already. If not, you're getting the idea that the term militia, same term in Spanish as in English, the militia is a well-understood concept, whether you are reading from the 1776 Virginia Constitution, 1777 New York Constitution, 1790 Pennsylvania Constitution, the talk about militia is there. And the concept of what they are is consistent, and the duty of what they need to be doing is there. They need to be armed and disciplined and ready. They don't need to just be in existence. They need to be armed and disciplined and ready. The term at the time for disciplined was sometimes regulated. You know, now a lot of times when we talk about regulation, it just means the government is making rules that you have to comply with to do things that are you should be allowed to do freely without regulation. But at the time, regulation was used more to mean it is ordered and set right. It's in a good condition of organization. It's in a good state of discipline. It's regulated or well regulated. We've seen both regulated and disciplined in these state constitutions. Now, I'm going on to the Militia Act of 1792. This is a federal government law that was passed. as a law, what part, what branch of the government puts forth a law, Ava? What branch of government makes a law?
Legislature.
But in our Constitution, there is a, there are checks and balances. There are division of powers among three branches, right? What branch of government has to agree to the law that has been passed by the legislative branch in order to, for it to become a law?
Executive.
The executive branch. And that goes back to ancient practice. You know, in England for centuries before this, it had been that Parliament can pass a bill, but it does not become law until it is signed by
the king.
The king. Or queen, the monarch. And so here is that same good provision. You know, it has to be passed by the legislature, signed by the president. And so this is a act of 1792 that did pass into law. So how many houses of Congress did it have to pass? Not how many branches are there in the government, but how many houses are there in our Congress that it had to pass? And the term for a two-house legislature is a...
Bicameral.
So let's all say it together. Bicameral. A bicameral legislature. So it passed two houses in our Constitution. And then this is the same as in the 1827 federal Mexican Constitution. Those, well, it's not exactly the same terminology. Real close. In the Mexican Constitution, the larger house with more members was the House of
Representatives.
That's our Constitution, House of Representatives. The Mexican 1827, the House of Deputies. And the smaller house with fewer members, it is the Senate. Either, both countries, Mexico and the U.S. of Mexico, U.S. of America. Okay. So I go over these things, you know, multiple times until I'm aware that everybody's got it. So the Militia Act of 1792, was that passed when it was still colonies, or when it was, or when we were states?
States.
Uh-huh. Because we became states with the Declaration of Independence in the year
1776.
And so this is when we were states. Is this under the Articles of Confederation or the present Constitution?
The present Constitution.
Because the Constitution was passed 1787. Went into effect, it was actually governed by the Constitution starting in 1789 in New York. Right. So this is 1792, so this is under our present Constitution. And who would the president have been at that time who signed this into law?
George Washington.
Do we figure that he had any expertise in matters of defending states against invasion, etc.?
Yes.
No one more experienced at the time, right? The Militia Act of 1792. An act more effectually to provide for the national defense by establishing an uniform militia throughout the United States. Now, I don't want you to try to take down every word that I'm saying. Let me read this to you and work to grasp it. And then we'll go back and talk about a couple of things in it. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that each and every free, able-bodied white male citizen of the respective states resident therein, who is or shall be of the age of 18 years and under the age of 45 years, except as is herein after accepted, shall severally and respectively be enrolled in the militia by the captain or commanding officer of the company within whose bounds such citizens shall reside. Okay? Now, in those opening lines are most of what we just talked about. Each and every. Okay? This is not volunteers. It's not certain ones who are drafted, conscripted, or whatever. The militia, rightly understood in the mature understanding of this by the Americans under George Washington, recognize that it is each and every able-bodied citizen, somebody who is, you know, too sickly, deformed, incapacitated somehow, not them, able-bodied, male, okay? This is not an institution for women. Now, you live in a country and in a state where this concept has been perverted to where now our military, the standing army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, all of that, and even your own state's National Guard, the police forces, etc., all include both men and women, and everybody is supposed to think that that is as it should be. That is not as it should be. That's an innovation in the history of mankind. Women should not be considered part of the militia, should not be part of the country's armed forces. And the understanding in 1792 was that it is male citizens who should be enrolled in the militia. It says free and white citizens of the states. Now, thankfully, since the time this was written, involuntary servitude is no longer part of life in any of the United States, so that is a moot point now, thankfully. You see that it says white citizens. People with other colors of skin were not considered people who should be enrolled in the militia. Thankfully, that distinction is no longer a part of our thinking in these United States, including in Texas. People now are not considered, you know, anything regarding your citizenship or your role in the military or the police forces or anything like that. None of that is contingent on any skin color, national heritage anymore, for which we're very thankful. And then it gives an age range. You have to be 18 to be required to enroll in the militia, and then you are not required to be enrolled in the militia once you reach age 45.
What is that little thing that mean after? Right after that, it's just something about...
Except as is herein after accepted. There'll be other things further down in this law that make exceptions to the language of every and 18 to 45 and all, 18 and under 45 and etc. Within whose bounds such citizens shall reside. Remember that we saw in the Mexican Constitution, the thing about it being, you know, local militias. The militia is something that, you know, you don't live in Texas and decide, I want to be in the Minnesota militia because theirs is better or something like that. You are in the militia. You are the militia of where you live. If it is by county, then we who live here in Fannin County, Texas, the able-bodied males 18 to 44 are need to be enrolled in the militia for this county or whatever the jurisdiction is. And so then the captain is supposed to notify every such man that he needs to be enrolled. Young men who reach the age of 18, the local commander is supposed to notify them that they need to enroll. People who move into the jurisdiction and qualify need to be notified to enroll. Every citizen so enrolled and notified shall provide himself with a good musket or firelock, a sufficient bayonet and belt, two spare flints, and a knapsack, a pouch with a box therein to contain not less than 24 cartridges. At that time, you know, it wasn't brass-cased cartridges like we have now. It was the charge of powder and the ball wrapped in paper, and that was a cartridge, suited to the bore of his musket or firelock. Each cartridge to contain a proper quantity of powder and ball, or with a good rifle, knapsack, shot pouch, and powder horn, 20 balls suited to the bore of his rifle, and a quarter of a pound of powder, and shall appear so armed, accoutred, and provided when called out to exercise or into service, except that when called out on company days to exercise only, he may appear without a knapsack. That's an interesting provision, isn't it? If you're called out to actual service, you need to bring your backpack full of extra stuff. If you're called out just for one day's exercising, then you don't have to bring that. The commissioned officers shall be armed with a sword. All muskets, within 5 years of passing this act, all muskets shall be of bores sufficient for balls of the 18th part of a pound. So they're going to standardize the arms across the whole militia of all the states.
Within a couple of years.
Within 5 years to give them an opportunity to get that done. So you see that it's a person's own arms. Every man is to arm himself. Here's something that I thought you all might enjoy. There shall be to each troop of horse one captain, two lieutenants, one cornet, four sergeants, four corporals, one saddler, one farrier, and one trumpet. It's talking about part of the militia will be horse rather than foot, cavalry or dragoons rather than infantry. And every unit of horse has one saddler, one farrier, and one trumpeter. I assume that a saddler must be someone who makes and especially repairs saddles and other tack. A farrier, I know, is the person who tends to horses' hooves and shoes. So every militia company that is horse has to have a saddler and a farrier and a trumpeter. The commissioned officers to furnish themselves with good horses of at least 14 hands and a half high, and to be armed with a sword and a pair of pistols, the holsters of which to be covered with bearskin caps. Each dragoon, cavalry, are soldiers who travel and normally fight on horseback. Dragoons are soldiers who travel on horseback for speed, but then normally dismount and fight on foot. Each dragoon to furnish himself with a serviceable horse, at least 14 hands and a half high, a good saddle, bridle, mail pillion and valise, holsters, and a breastplate and crupper, a pair of boots and spurs, a pair of pistols, a saber, and a cartouche box to contain 12 cartridges for pistols. I don't know what the thing was. I don't know what the thing was about the horse has to be 14 and a half hands high. Do you know why?
That's the height that differentiates a pony from a horse.
Really? Ah.
Lower than that, it counts as a pony.
I'm glad somebody knew that. Thanks, Angie. It shall be the duty of the commanding officer at every muster to cause the militia to be exercised and trained agreeable to the said rules of discipline. The adjutant general shall make a return of all the militia of the state to the commander-in-chief of the said state and a duplicate of the same to the president of the United States. There's going to be inspectors that will go around and inspect all of the militia and then report to the state commander and to the commander-in-chief of the whole armed forces, which is the president. Now, I am setting these things before you, these documents from the 1770s, there didn't happen to be anything from the 1780s, and the 1790s, including this early act under our present Constitution, signed by our most famous man, George Washington, to help you understand that the militia, that word, is a good, sound word, both English and Spanish and probably other languages. That the concept, to help you understand what the concept is, to help you understand some of the things that make up the practical outworkings of that. Now, you also should think about what's stated in the Second Amendment to the Constitution. This actually predates that Militia Act. I should have said this first, but I forgot about it till now. You know that there's the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, passed right away, just as soon as the new government was formed. One of the first things they did was put forth these several amendments. And the Second Amendment is a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. You recognize that language from earlier documents. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So this, and that is still the Second Amendment in our Constitution today. This concept of the militia being all the able-bodied men, and all the able-bodied men should be enrolled, there should be a standardization of their weapons, there should be a training of them, they should be in readiness, because really, the militia, well-regulated, armed, ready, is really the only safe or sure way to secure a free state.
Every man, the entire
right.
You can never outsize that.
Right. No standing army can ever approach a tenth of its manpower, and the militia itself will not infringe the rights of the people, at least not very much, because it is the people themselves. I want you all to make sure you all understand that, just for general purposes of being citizens of whatever state or country you are in, but including Texas. And I want you to know that, as far back as our first state constitution, when Tejas was part of the state Coahuila y Tejas, and when we weren't even part of the United States of America, we were part of the United States of Mexico, even back then, both our federal government and our state government provided for the militia. So then the settlers came into Texas, understanding militia from being U.S. citizens, USA citizens. They come into Texas, they understand the militia, they immediately start forming themselves into armed corps according to that concept, and then it becomes the very provisions of their federal and state constitutions. Okay, friends, time's up.